This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, ChinaMoneyNetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hi, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Dr. Kathy Walsh, Associate Professor of Finance at Australian National University. She spoke to me on the phone from Sydney and explained why the Chinese currency has a greater chance than the usual to form a dual currency system alongside the US dollar and how the global network of offshore RMB centers will evolve in the future. Dr. Walsh's current research is on the Chinese capital markets with a particular focus on the internationalization of the Chinese currency. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Dr. Walsh, welcome to China Money Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
You just issued a report about the Chinese currency, the renminbi's internationalization. It's very interesting how the RMB has internationalized during the past couple of decades. But before we talk about the RMB, can you maybe first tell us a little bit, if you know, about the history of other currencies that has internationalized and what kind of path they have been on to achieve a very important currency status in the world?
Yes. Well, we covered a little bit of this in our first report that we wrote on RMB internationalization, which was released last year. And that one we co-authored with Barry Eichengreen from UC Berkeley, and he's done a lot of work in sort of comparing and contrasting different internationalization processes. I think there's no real counterpart to what China's going through at the moment. A lot of people draw similarities to what happened in Japan when they tried to internationalize their currency and sort of fell short. So China is using that as an example of being very steady in their progress towards internationalization by doing pilot projects and as is often said, by crossing the river by stepping on small stones rather than taking one big leap. The US example, when they internationalized their currency, when the US was internationalized, that's quite a different situation that was sort of coupled with a time of war and a time of transition of different economies. So it's not something that China can really take any parallels from. So I think that in this situation, they're really sort of forging ahead without a real equivalent roadmap to look at.
So let's look at the RMB then. Can you just give a little bit of history on what kind of progress it has made so far?
Okay, well, I think that there's sort of two sides with the internationalization of the renminbi. We're looking at both the current account and the capital account. The current account has been pretty much open since 2009 when they opened up the opportunity to invoice and settle in RMB, and that has increased substantially over time. The capital account is quite different, though. They've had quite a few programs both coming out of China and going back into China with capital transactions. So we have QFII and RQFII quotas being able to vest into China and QDII, domestic programs, coming out of China. And these are all, again, pilot programs that have been set up with small quotas to start with, usually starting with Hong Kong as a pilot area and then expanding to other jurisdictions after that. So it's been a slow and a very careful move. We, in our very first report, put a bit of a timeline on this with the expectation that the capital account would be fully open in about 10 years. Since we've written that report, I think things have even sped up faster, and there's some expectation that we will see a lot of movement over the next sort of 3 to 5, 7 years.
So what is your timeline for the capital account to be fully open now?
At the moment, we're still sticking. Our original report was 10 years. We put a timeline of 10 years, and that was a year ago. I think probably in about 5 to 7 years, you'll see most of the capital controls removed.
So around 2020 or a little bit after.
Yes. And that's consistent now with quite a few of the news articles that are coming out of China as well. People are using 2020 as a bit of a benchmark for progress.
So, and also that RMB has already become a very important currency in both in trade settlement.
Yes.
I think it's already the number third or fourth currency in global trade.
It was the fourth last month, and then it dropped back to fifth again this month. It's very close at the moment. So for RMB trade settlement, that's actually quite an important part of our report. We did a survey of companies in China and Australia doing trade with each other, and we were looking at the expectations of RMB trade settlement. And even though, for instance, in Australia, our percentage of trade settlement in RMB is still very low. We're only looking at 1% trade settled in RMB. Our expectation is that's going to grow to 20% over the next, by 2020. Whereas in other countries, for instance, with Hong Kong and also the greater ASEAN region, the proportion of trade settled in RMB is much higher. The constraint we have in Australia is that most of our trade with China is in commodities, especially for exports. So in that situation, the commodities are settled and priced in US dollars, and until you see a change in how those contracts are priced, you're not going to see much of an increase in RMB usage for trade settlement from Australia to China. However, we do expect that the commodities will be starting to be priced in the next 3 to 5 years. Some of the commodity contracts will be priced in RMB going forward.
You said some. Is there any more specific projections on
not specifically how much of the commodities trade will be invoiced in RMB, but what we're seeing is a lot of very liquid futures contracts on, say, the Dalian Exchange in RMB. So these are local domestic futures contracts for commodities that are being run out of China. Once these get linked to offshore exchanges, it provides then a benchmarking situation so you can price your contracts in RMB. Until you create that benchmarking backbone to your contracts, you can't proceed. So having seen the increase in volume in these local exchanges is a clear indication that China's moving towards pricing in RMB for commodities contracts.
What's next for RMB's internationalization going forward? You just mentioned when you look at the RMB's internationalization, you look at current accounts as well as capital accounts. I mean, for the Chinese government, they're really looking also at a few mandates, including offshore RMB centers, increasing the amount of trade settlements, etc. So what are the next steps from the regulatory perspective?
Okay, so what China has done as part of this internationalization process is establish this network of offshore trading hubs. So I think that last count we now have 19 official settlement banks in cities around the world. Now, the pre-official official settlement bank, again, I'll use the example of Sydney, is not essential for trading in RMB, but it does provide a more structured framework for trading and settlement in RMB. So, for instance, in New York, you can still settle contracts with your bank in renminbi, but your bank will be organising that through another channel rather than through an official settlement channel. Having this network of official settlement centres around the world is providing this preferential treatment between official settlement hubs in China that a lot of different jurisdictions are vying to get a piece of this pie and trying to carve out a niche for their own area. Now, within these settlements, these RMB trading hubs, the business conducted transactions.
Sorry, before you go ahead, you said 19 RMB
yes.
settlement banks. And how many offshore RMB centers are there? Like, and how do you define RMB offshore?
That's a good point. In our report, we designated official RMB, we call them hubs. So hubs and centers are sort of interchangeable. But the official, the establishment official settlement bank for us is enough to establish it as an RMB hub. Some definitions are a little looser. Some would say that as long as you had two out of the three, we call them gifts, which is a swap facility, an RQ fee quota, and a settlement bank, as long as you got two out of three, then you'd be classified. So Switzerland is a good example of that. It doesn't have an official settlement bank, but it does have an RQ fee quota and a swap facility. So the definitions are a little loose. There's no strict definition. We've gone with our primary defining moment.
The basic, for the hub. Right. In your message, there will be 19 offshore settlement banks as well offshore RMB centers. 19.
Okay. That's correct. Those 19 offshore settlement banks are the center of those particular centers. On top of that, you have other centers that are conducting RMB activity, for instance, Switzerland, that don't actually have an official settlement bank.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so
that's a little
example. It is a little confusing, but I think it's mainly because these arrangements are made over quite a long period of time, and there's been a bit of a rush of settlement bank approvals in the last 12 months. So we had Hong Kong was established very early on, and then you saw the flow on to Singapore and to London alike, and there was quite a bit of a momentum over the last few months with a number more centres being approved.
Right, and you said you've been to many of these offshore R&D centres. You've actually visited them and then see the difference between them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. As part of this report, in order to do the research, we travelled to many offshore trading centres around Asia, into Europe, and even we went to the US to find out, more importantly, why New York wasn't setting up as an offshore trading hub. So we got to talk to both official people and markets people about what they were aiming for, how they were carving out a niche for their particular centre. With London, for instance, it's quite obvious because they are the biggest FX trading hub globally. With London, with Luxembourg, it seems like they were more trying to carve out a funds management niche for the RMB. With Singapore and Hong Kong, it's fairly obvious, large Chinese populations, large Chinese corporate presence. So that was quite a natural sort of move to be an RMB centre, whereas others, it wasn't as clear. And so part of the analysis we were looking at is how will these hubs survive once the RMB is fully internationalized, and can they actually carve out a particular niche?
Well, wouldn't it be unnecessary to have all the centers when the RMB is fully internationalized, or it will be there won't be any centers anymore because everywhere
will be. Well, there won't be any centers, but you know there will still be pools of liquidity and particular gravitation towards different centers for different activities. So I think what's happening over the next sort of 3 to 5 years, while we're still in transition, all the individual hubs have some preferential arrangements with China because they have appointed RMB centres and they have access back into China for investment purposes through the RQFI licences. So what they can do is establish over the medium term some groundwork in building up RMB business that will then flow through once RMB is fully internationalised, and you can then concentrate that business in that particular centre. So there is definitely going to, once you remove the barriers in, say, 2020 and there's no more need for a network of offshore hubs, there's still going to be a need for building up RMB business outside of China, and that's what the different hubs are vying for at the moment.
So you've visited many of them. Can you just describe the physical appearance? Is it any different from, you know, any other kind of like foreign exchange trading places?
No, because it's really, it's not a particular hub itself. It's not like you can visually see the RMB trading hub. It's run through the banks or through the funds management companies or through the capital market. So in each of the areas, they have a different, depending on what the hub speciality is, will be that focus. Some hubs have got a much more of a visual presence. For instance, the City of London has a put a lot of resources into promoting RMB activity in London. So they have a web presence, they do a lot of reporting, they provide data, they do analysis, and they consolidate that in London. They do the same with Luxembourg for finance. They have a website presence for that. And it's drawing together all the components of RMB activity in that particular area.
So why is the U.S. not pushing to become an offshore R&D center then?
That's an interesting point. It's more of a geopolitical view, I think, more than anything else. There's still R&D activity being conducted in China, in the U.S., but if you talk to the U.S. officials, they're much less positive and much less optimistic about China fully internationalizing. Their timeline for China is much longer, and the impact that China will have on the rest of the economy, their expectations are much smaller than everybody else's. So it's just a change of view in the US versus outside. Obviously, if China rises to that particular level and challenges the US for a share of that dominant currency, that's going to be to the detriment of the U.S. So in some ways, it's a protectionist view.
So now we've talked about offshore RMB centers. Another important function of a currency is serving as a reserve currency. And in that front, a lot of people are expecting the International Monetary Fund is going to include the RMB in the special joint rights basket of currencies. Maybe very soon. So what is going to be the impact of that decision on the RMB's internationalization?
Well, it's largely a symbolic issue. No one really trades the SDR, so it's not something that suddenly everyone's going to be changing their portfolios. Central banks around the world will be holding more RMB, but most central banks actually hold a significant proportion of RMB already. So, for instance, in Australia... The Reserve Bank already holds 5% in RMB.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead. I'll ask my question.
No, that's okay. It's just a little
bit of delay. Go ahead.
So I think it will make a difference. It depends on what level it comes in at. We've just had analysis, for instance, for the MSCI index and also the FTSE indexes with the expectation that China will enter those equity indexes over the coming years, but they'll start from a low rate and then increase. We don't really have an indication at what level the RMB, if it does come into the SDR, would come in at.
There are some estimates about how much RMB central banks around the world will have to hold once RMB is included in the SDR. Do you have any estimates for that?
Well, it depends on what level it comes in at, because at the moment, a lot of countries already hold, say, for instance, Australia holds 5% of its reserves in RMB. So if when it comes into the SDR, it comes in at sort of the market weight, yes, we would expect an increase in that. But we're still waiting on an indication from the IMF as to whether or not this will come through. And unfortunately, the decision that was due at the end of last month has now been delayed until the end of this month.
Eventually, do you have any projections for how important the RMB will become in terms of being a reserve currency?
Yes. Well, I mean, the whole process of RMB internationalization, the status of becoming a reserve currency is the final step along the path. I think that given the size of China and how it's growing and the size of its equity and bond markets and just the sheer size of China itself, we are going to see the RMB as a reserve currency. Whether or not it challenges the US dollar, I mean, the euro is a good example of it sort of went close to challenging and that had some problems and didn't actually become a sort of a dual currency the way we expected it, I think there's probably more opportunity for China, for the RMB to become a dual currency alongside the US dollar. But I don't really have a time frame on that.
Well, that's going to take a long time for sure.
That will take a long time, yes.
So now China has seen this economic slowdown and also some very turbulent markets, stock market movements, and a lot of people think that's going to sort of put on some of the reform and opening up policies of the RMB on hold or at least delay them. So does that change your projections for any timeline of any policies that might be implemented in the future?
As far as the economic slowdown, I think that even with the sort of the next 3 to 5 year projections, you're still talking at quite considerable rates of growth compared to other nations. So I really don't think that's so much of a factor. Yes, it's come off a much bigger high, but that's normal for a country that's going through a transition. So I don't think that's an issue. With the stock market volatility, I think that what was more interesting with the stock market volatility is the reaction of the Chinese authorities. Now, I think that they probably reacted very quickly and severely, and maybe they'll change the way that they do that in the future. But it did show that they were letting the market go to some extent and then coming in and forcibly controlling it in other ways, but in a very positive way. We see that as almost a blip, but nothing significant to derail the internationalization process.
Now lastly, the exchange rate of the RMB obviously is also an important factor in the internationalization process. During the summer, we had this sudden devaluation of the RMB, which shocked global markets.
Surprising, yes.
And what is your outlook for the exchange rate, especially its determination process for the future?
I think that's a difficult one because you're right. It is closely linked with the interest rate and the foreign exchange rate movement. The interest rate and the foreign exchange rate movements are closely linked. So while they're liberalising the interest rate, interest rates, they have already in some, you're going to see quite a bit of movement still on the exchange rate. However, I think the bigger question is what China's going to do under this situation. Because for a long time, most Chinese firms didn't bother hedging because they thought that the RMB only had one direction. This two-way volatility has meant that most corporates within China are having to rethink their entire hedging strategy, which actually flows through to the very first point about invoicing. One way of controlling that is then to put all of their contracts in RMB rather than US dollars so they don't actually bear that foreign exchange rate risk. So in some ways, this two-way volatility that's been experienced in China is actually going to help the internationalization process. But I don't really have a view on where the foreign currency exchange rate will actually end up. That's outside of my area.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Walsh.
No problem at all. Thank you very much for having me.